The corpse of a kaiju is the center of this odd Japanese film, where the stark reality of rotting flesh collides with the tension that that gaseous body brings. Will this film explode in our faces, or will it hit the sweet spot of quirky and cool kaiju action? Find out along with us. This is Kaiju versus History. What to do with the dead kaiju?
Welcome back to Kaiju versus History. This is your government cleanup crew member, Miles. And joining me is a guy that smells like Ginkgo biloba, if you know what I mean, Patrick. Patrick, how you doing, bud?
So much poop and
vomit jokes.
Vomit, yeah. I don't know. Is Ginkgo biloba that stinky?
The way they phrased it made it sound like they said it was somewhere between vomit and poop.
Yeah, it's in between. It's in the middle.
So I'm
oh,
like,
boy.
Does that constitute diarrhea?
It's the third thing, Miles. It's Ginkgo biloba. And of course, we're talking about what to do with the dead kaiju this week. What a crazy movie. I'm so glad that there have been people that have gone out of their way to subtitle this for English-speaking folk. Because I don't think it's on streaming anywhere. And unless you're like me and have bought a copy from China.
Yep.
Or maybe Taiwan. You don't have access to this. Yeah, a 2022 movie that I was very excited about because I was like, oh my gosh, it's a non-Godzilla and, you know, ostensibly fairly big budget kaiju movie coming out of Japan.
I was pretty surprised by the budget of this one.
Yeah, we'll talk about it, but for what this is a surprise comedy film. I didn't think it was going to be as comedic as, I guess the trailer didn't really belay that, but a film directed by Satoshi Miki and starring a host of fairly young Japanese actors, many of them also like pop culture kind of people, like singers and stuff. I don't know if you
deep into that. There were some people I absolutely recognized. Like the guy who played Blues was like Kamen Rider Kuga.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting.
Like Joe Adagiri. If I'm not mistaken, I got to double check, but I'm pretty sure Kuga was what brought Kamen Rider back after the 80s. Like that was what is responsible for what we have now. Is there was this kind of like Doctor Who, where like it started to hibernate in the way 80s, and then
yeah, well there was like a time period between the 70s and 80s, I think, where they took they weren't making new seasons, right?
Well, so it was, they did new seasons for a little bit, and then after Black and its sequel, like at the very end of the 80s, I think in 89, there was nothing until Kuga in 2000. And because what I saw him, I was like, because for those who don't listen to them, or you're a nerd, Drew and I did a whole time period where we're going through kind of sampling a lot of Kamen Rider. And Kuga was one of the ones that we had covered because it was the one that, you know, brought it back. He also pops up in one of my favorite anthology series from Japan, Midnight Diner.
One of the little inserts in the DVD here is a Toei DVD for a Kamen Rider film. And I don't speak Chinese or don't read Chinese, so I'm not sure which one exactly, but I imagine there's some crossover there, as this is a co-production, this film, between Toei and Gu, who we've covered on the podcast before, who have been producers and co-producers of many films along with Daiei films. I think they took over for a number of Daiei productions.
Yeah, they did a Monster X Strikes Back, didn't they?
Yes, because they were, I think, had own the rights to the X from Outer Space.
So I was also really happy to see Yamada. He is familiar to me, not because of his music career as a pop idol in the group Hey Say Jump, but he was the live action Edward Elric. And it hasn't come up on the podcast, but I am a massive, massive, massive Full Metal Alchemist fan. That movie does exist. But he was Edward Elric in the live action, I think it's a trilogy of films.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah, I think only one of them, I think, made it here, which was a Netflix original. And then there was, I think it's called The Revenge of Scar and like The Final Alchemy or something.
Let's talk. We've been talking a lot about other TV and movies. Let's talk about this film. I'm excited.
I know you are. Well, before we get started and talking about this 2022 Japanese comedy-ish?
Dramedy.
How'd you film? Well, it's an attempted comedy. Tell us, what's in a title?
Right. You know, I've typed this title into Google and into our notes incorrectly several times. For the longest time, I thought it was, what do you do with a dead kaiju? Or what to do with a dead kaiju? But yeah, what to do with the dead kaiju is the kind of English-y style title. Definitely belays, I think, a bit of comedy. Like, when was the last time? I guess there technically isn't a... there is a question mark. It's stylized with a question mark in several releases. But yeah, not often is there a question as a title. But this does have a different title in Japan. Daikaiju no Atu Shimatsu, which translates to the aftermath of the kaiju, or destroying the kaiju, or, you know, in fact, cleaning up the kaiju. What do you do with the remains of a kaiju is basically the title, which I thought was very interesting. The box set that I have here from, like I said, I believe Taiwan, says The Day After Hope on it, which is pretty funny, because that is kind of like in universe the title for the monster, which is terrible. But I'm glad I bought this. I went out of my way to get a physical copy, because there, like I said, there was no streaming when we put this on the list. I wanted to make sure that we would have some way to watch it, even though I don't think this has English subtitles in it. But it comes with a bunch of fun little postcards and this little informational book that has art of the kaiju, even though we don't get to see it alive in the movie. Spoiler, we get to see some aspects of what it would have looked like.
Yeah, it's very T-Rexy, Godzilla-y. It's very kind of a generic kaiju design.
Yeah, I like it. It translates into other countries as the kaiju monster dies, or mysterious monster dies in Taiwan, and in Korea, the aftermath of the giant monster, which is very similar to the Japanese title. But yeah, I don't know why with many international kind of markets they went with what to do with the dead kaiju. But it is a funny title, at the very least, like I said. And to be fair, an accurate title, because the entire movie is really spent with basically where almost every other kaiju movie ends. It picks up immediately after the monster's dead, the monster's lying on the ground. Now what happens? And in some aspects, it gets really nitty gritty into the details. But yeah, the tagline for this movie translates to, isn't that harder than defeating it, getting rid of the body, you know?
Yeah, makes sense.
And I feel like there's definitely been a weird confluence of this aspect of kaiju monsters in the last few years between what's the name of the manga, the kaiju cleanup manga? Gosh,
is it kaiju number 8?
Kaiju number 8, yes. And then this year they announced a video game that was like the pressure washer simulator game, but for, I think it is just called Kaiju Cleanup, where you're like blasting the body parts of kaiju off of the streets, like breaking them down and stuff. So yeah, maybe it's just in the zeitgeist, you know, Miles?
Yeah.
What do you think about this movie? Because I mean, that is the basic plot. They try a number of different things to destroy the body, but I would say it's mostly about, like, you know, like many things in the last 10 years, it's kind of about the government's response to the Fukushima disaster and the dangers of inaction, the dangers of not giving the public all the information that they need. But in this movie, dealt with in definitely a more comedic way than we've seen in other kaiju movies.
Yeah, the problem I have with this movie is, And it's not just me, and it's not just me being an American, because I looked at a lot of Japanese reviewers too. I don't find it that funny. The comedy doesn't land for me, and it's also often totally confused.
It definitely does not focus on comedy. I would say comedy is like less than half of the
and
movie.
And that's the problem with the visual tone of the film. It kind of confuses the audience in that way. And that's not to say, like, I love the conceit. You know, obviously there's this giant dead cot. So we're watching kind of like a Walking Dead situation where Walking Dead was always meant to be like, okay, what happens after the zombie movie?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is what happens after the kaiju movie, where something happened, the kaiju died, and, well, now Japan's left with this massive carcass in the middle of, you know, a public space. And
yeah.
I think that's a great idea. It's a fantastic idea for a film. It's a great idea for a comedy or a drama film, no matter how you want to slice it. And we are sort of focused on a triangle of characters, despite the fact that there is a rectangle that we are shown once and then it's never brought up again, where we have our main kind of, I guess, hero, even though he's not always the focus, Ada. And then we have Yukino, who is our main heroine. And then we have Amine. And
yeah. Amine is like the government kind of lead and like liaison to the, I'm guessing it's prime minister over in Japan. And he is married to Amine, who's the prior boyfriend of Ta, who disappeared like after the kaiju attack, like, and then reappeared with no explanation.
Yeah, but he also disappeared for like 2 years.
Yeah, well, I was a little confused about the timeline, because like, how long is the body there for, you know? Like, when
we don't
when
get an answer to that, and also we don't have the best localization, so there, I think there was also things that may have been mistranslated, so they're not included, so there, it might be in the film, we just don't know it. But that timeline was always kinky to me, because I'm like, the movie treats it as if he disappeared after the kaiju battle.
But I thought so too, but
they keep bringing up the fact that he's been gone for 2 years, and you know, we're supposed to be in the impression that the kaiju just died.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if that, you know, because we, unfortunately, of all the money that they spent on this movie, we do get several flashbacks, but none of the kaiju attacking, you know, none of the kaiju while alive, which feels like kind of a cruel joke on the audience. But we do get a couple, and one of the, which, spoiler warning for this movie, is, I think, the opening scene of Ultraman, which is this blue lightning whisking Arata away and either killing him or turning him into an Ultraman-like character in this universe. And that's where he is for 2 years. And then he comes back and maybe destroys the kaiju. But once again, we don't see that. We just hear that a blue kind of lightning bolt is what does in
kill the
monster.
Kaiju, yeah.
They refer to it in some parts fairly early on. The prime minister talks about the Deus Ex Machina. Like, they did not expect the monster to die, so they had no plans for how to deal with the dead body, because at this point, it is a Godzilla-like monster. They've described that conventional weapons have no effect on it, which proves, you know, makes a lot more difficult to destroy the corpse, because they're, you know, they have like drilling equipment. They're trying to get past its skin, and like, nothing's working, which is very interesting conceptually. But yeah, this movie turns in then to like a mix of Godzilla, a mix of Ultraman, and
really wants to be a funny Shin Godzilla.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's so funny. You know, we're not too far away from Shin Ultraman, which is kind of a funny in universe movie. I would say it's the most comedic.
I love Shin Ultraman. And I know Drew really loves Shin Kamen Rider. And Shin Kamen Rider is very, very good. And I was super, super into Shin Ultraman. And I, from what I've heard, it's more likely we'll get a sequel to one of those rather than Shin Godzilla, despite what's been announced online.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. But it's been so long. This movie definitely does feel like it wants to be a somewhat spiritual successor to Shin Godzilla, mostly because of how much back and forth there is with the government agencies. You've got the constant bungling of things. Yeah. There's definitely some characters that are trying their best to come out of this emergency looking like the hero, or at least not looking like someone to blame. And that's where some of the comedy comes from, and some of the, you know, they're kind of the bad guys in this movie, because there's not like a giant, you know, monster to fight. The monster is these people that are
everyone's keeping, personal vendettas, yeah,
keeping information from the public. They are trying to be the first to break information. They're trying to tamp down on leakers.
They're trying to keep certain people away from certain people.
Yeah, it's really fascinating. It is probably something that I'm definitely going to rewatch this movie. I think once we can get some kind of
official version
localization. Yeah, if this comes to streaming, I'm definitely watching it again.
I wouldn't mind seeing a cleaned up version for sure. And I mean, again, we've mentioned this several times, but like the availability of Japanese cinema in general is pretty pathetic in this country. And I mean, I know there are, you know, boutique studios who do release, you know, some of the horror or that, you know, grab some of the Godzilla stuff, but, or if there's something like that gets some award buzz, like Drive My Car or Past Lives or something like that. But it's really unfortunate that it's so difficult to get a hold of Japanese films in general. And like, there was one that luckily did come out on the festival circuit here. So there was a kind of a release. It's one of my favorite movies this year, called Happy End. And it's just unfortunate, because like movies like this, like we're watching work that someone did. Someone, you know, made the effort to give us some sort of translation and localization for sure. But that said, you know, there's probably a lot of context, a lot of sentences that may have given us more information that, you know, just aren't present because it was a fan. And while I'm thankful for that fan or a group of fans that did their hard work, it is too bad that we don't have like a real, you know, sealed stamp of approval. This is the movie as is. However, seeing some of the reactions from the native audience, including someone calling it the Devil Man of the Reiwa era.
Oh yeah, not a good look.
No, I've seen that one. The early 2000s, there was a lot of heavily CGI adaptations like Kashern and Devilman, and even the late aughts with their attempted Gatchaman movie. Most of them are not very good. And yeah, Devilman is often considered one of the worst Japanese movies ever made.
They definitely, I mean, it sounds like the director kind of got the style movie that he was looking to make. In an interview, he said, quote, "My aim for my film is to be ridiculous," end quote. And, you know, specifically pointed out the rigor mortis of the kaiju's leg being that way because it looked, you know, humorous. And they do some other pretty humorous things with the body, like the environment department head falling into the open wound, like having the press conference on top of the corpse. And one of my favorite scenes is when she starts growing mushrooms at the back of her neck, and the Amane, her assistant, like snatches it off the back of her neck to hide it from other officials. Yeah, I like what little we get to see of this kaiju, as we're mostly seeing it as a set piece for most of this movie. As I said, this little booklet that came with it has some looks at the monster of like what it would have looked like standing up. But it's pretty much just like a large Godzilla T-Rex inspired design. I'm kind of glad they didn't go super heavy into it. The original idea supposedly was to do a actual Godzilla corpse or a Gamera corpse even, you know, but securing the rights to that obviously was not going to be easy. That said, as much as I do enjoy this movie, we have so many flashbacks. Like, we couldn't have gotten a little bit of this monster alive, you know, not one scene of it ambling around or causing some destruction. I mean, it does cause, its corpse causes a lot of disruption.
Yeah, they try to go for that kind of a Swiss Army Man comedy with like the...
Oh, very much so.
The you know, the gases and stuff being released, and... It, while conceptually funny, like, it just, and here's the wild thing about this movie, and I do want to say this because I know it sounds like I'm really harping on it. I think Satoshi Miki is a phenomenal director. He directed the crap out of this movie. It's gorgeous. It's well shot.
Absolutely, like, beautiful.
Yeah, it's a very, very well made movie. He also wrote the script, and I think the script is where I really buck against this film the most, or at least the script as I have experienced it, which, I mean, again, I feel like this score is going to need an asterisk anyway, because this is kind of what we have. A lot of times we do have some sort of odd translation or another that has come, you know, from the Philippines or whatever, but has been actually like screened as we watched it. This is, we're now getting into some areas where it's like, this is what we've got. This is what we have access to, and we wanted to cover it.
Yeah.
So how did you find, because this movie is so scattered with its focus, how did you find that? Because like I kind of felt we were going to follow the special forces for most of it, and it's like we spend the least amount of time. We're meant to kind of think that our boy Ada is like the protagonist of the film, but I feel like out of all the main characters, he has the least screen time and the least lines.
It starts pretty heavy with him in kind of like the situation room and like taking on this task, but the middle part of the movie, he is very background, and it is, it's funny you mentioned The Walking Dead, because it feels like more of a large cast film, because we have so many protagonists and side characters that we're following.
Folks, as we kind of mentioned, there's a lot of famous Japanese actors and award winners. And
I could have sworn that Ben Furuta, the guy that played Ultraman in the suit, was in this movie. I thought he was.
I'm not sure. He might be.
Well, I thought he was the old guy that they went to for, for guidance at one point in the movie, but it is another actor.
You talking about Yamakuta?
Maybe. It's been a few weeks since since I watched this, but he is not in this movie, even though I think that would have been a perfect cameo.
Well, especially the way the movie goes. Now, we do have votes like the actor who played, I think, the character you're talking about, Yutaka Matsushige. He was in Godzilla 2000 as well as Ring. But I think one of the biggest cameos for American audiences would be seeing Rinko Kikuchi.
Yeah. There's very small.
It's kind of a blink and you miss it cameo.
Yeah. A lot of small roles for some fairly large actors and actresses. But she's been, obviously, we know her from the first Pacific, I guess both Pacific Rim movies.
Both of them.
But
yeah,
mostly the first one. Yeah. She's like a politician or something in this, and is like really in not a lot of the movie, right?
Right. She is just like I said, it's more a blink and you miss it cameo, but I mean, it was still cool to see her, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I gotta get Ryusuke Yamada credit. I mean, the dude, and I think that's what makes this the lack of focus on him so disappointing. The dude has an on-screen charisma. Mm. Like,
yes,
you want to see this guy, like the. And this is the kind of praise I give him. Like, if they made a Japanese live-action Resident Evil series, he would be my cast for Leon Kennedy.
That'd be great casting. He looks good in that jacket.
He has this swagger to him.
And that's one of the things that makes his casting so great. And there's so many hints to him being a hero, protagonist, alien-human hybrid kind of thing. Like, he's got the cool military motorcycle in the movie. He's got this charisma about him. He's definitely got a mysterious backstory, which they allude to before we get to see that flashback, and then we're like,
he's also on this cool motorcycle, which is giving Kamen Rider. I'm sorry, but it wants to say it gives Kamen Rider vibes.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The way he takes off at, like, in that first sequence, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, the way he drives off really reminds me of the original Kamen Rider. And I was like, man, I want to follow this guy. And the movie's like, yeah, he's cool, isn't he? We'll see him later.
Yeah. I mean, he gets to have the kind of climax of the movie and the aforementioned Deus Ex Machina at the end. And yeah, I don't really know what to expect from this movie just from the trailers, but it definitely seemed more action packed. I will say, yeah, when I first saw this, I really did think of Shin Godzilla, and this definitely lived up to the kind of bureaucratic behind the scenes action of Shin Godzilla stuff that, you know, I think it's pretty much a common trope in all kaiju movies, is that there is always a situation room. Usually it is just kind of like generals and people planning things out. But this movie, it's more about the cabinet members. And we've seen that in a few other Japanese movies besides Shin Godzilla, of like decision making processes being kind of a little slow.
Yeah, and a lot of passing of the buck.
But I will say the other thing that this movie reminded me of was Godzilla Tokyo SOS, where we had dead Kamibas kind of washed up on the beach, like a and the government like kind of roping it off and treating it like a beached whale. And I will be honest, I've always had a fascination, like, what do they do with the bodies, the body parts? And I, you know, who else had that fascination was Guillermo del Toro, because that was like one of the main things of Pacific Rim, is there's like a black market for kaiju parts, and the bones are like turned into buildings and crazy things like that. And I was all with the science minister. I was like, oh yeah, turn the bones into an awesome museum. I would love to go to Japan and walk through kaiju.
Well, bones, yeah, I mean, that made the most sense, and it seems like that's what they want to do, but they also just didn't know, like, and I kind of thought, and they probably didn't do it to avoid comparisons, I thought they were going to go the monster seafood war route, where it's like, okay, we'll turn it into food.
Yeah.
But obviously, if it has been sitting there for 2 years, maybe not.
Yeah, I don't think we're to believe that it's been dead for 2 years, because it seems very, we need to get dealing with this now. So I think it probably was defeated 2 years ago, and then it's come back, you know, within that time. But once again, we'll find out more when we get the full translation. Do you have a favorite scene in the movie, Miles?
When the environmental minister falls off the kaiju.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
that's one of the better actual comedic moments. I was like, okay, that's pretty good.
there is a lot of physicality comedy in that situation room, which I think is a little lost in translation, but I like the one minister calling out he's like the chief librarian of Japan, or like historian, who I think they said he looks around like a frightened bird when he doesn't know what to do. And he's like looking all around the room, his head's on a bobble. My favorite scene, though, is when they realize they have to name the kaiju, and they put together a conference room of like 20 people, and like the head writer and like poet laureate of Japan, and like all these people, and they announce the name of the corpse of the body is Hope, which is to me the funniest part of the movie, because it is absolutely the terrible name that this government agency would come up with. It feels very much like the committee that names the mascots for the Olympics, and it's always something super dumb and generic like that. And yeah, I do hate that scene as much as I love it, because they had Fartzilla as a name staring right in front of them, and they decided to fumble that.
No, they didn't fumble that. No, Patrick.
That's all the corpse is doing. It's just a big old gas bag at this point. You mentioned you were a little surprised about the production of this movie. You know, this was coming towards the tail end of the pandemic. It actually started shooting, I think, before the pandemic started, and then had to stop for basically a full year before they moved on. I've seen online places putting this budget at $13 million, about 2 billion yen, which is huge. I mean, for like any Japanese movie, a lot more than I thought this movie would get. And it just didn't perform very well. It opened like number 3 in Japan.
Yeah,
the week it came out.
I remember this being well advertised, because I mean, we knew about it pretty clearly here. I think Kotaku or someone wrote an article on it. But Japanese fans did not receive this warmly.
Well, I just to put it in perspective, the budget for Shin Godzilla, you know, like 5 years, when was Shin Godzilla? 2017?
2016.
So 6 years before. The budget for Shin Godzilla was 1.3 billion yen. So it had a smaller, or this movie had a higher budget than Shin Godzilla.
Higher budget, but.
And but Godzilla Minus One. Sometimes
one, like you give something a bunch of money and it's still a swing and a miss. That happens quite frequently in Hollywood.
But Godzilla Minus One was basically the same budget. It's between 1.5 and 2 billion yen, which is, you know, crazy because of the difference in quality of those movies. But I will say this movie looks great. You know,
it does. It is a very, very good looking movie. I will not rob it of that for sure.
But it doesn't deliver what the audiences wanted. Rotten Tomatoes has this at a 29% freshness, but only 7 reviews. It's not a ton. And then it's a little kinder, I think, for IMDb and Letterboxd and places where fans have been able to watch this, put at like 5 out of 10 stars, that kind of neighborhood. You already mentioned the review that says the Devilman of the Rahway era.
such a slap in the face. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to go that harsh on it, but I mean, mm-hmm. I could see if Japanese fans, I mean, you know, we're in this new kaiju golden age, and you get a big budget Japanese kaiju themed movie, you've got some expectations. And when a movie kind of fails to deliver whatever those expectations were, it can be pretty frustrating. So I can see why the audience didn't receive this super warmly.
Right. Are you ready to get to our ratings of this film?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty solid for my personal enjoyment. I did find it funny in parts. It definitely seems to want to take itself extremely seriously in other parts, which it just, there were some characters that never were involved in the comedy aspects. You know, Arata, for example, did not have a funny scene in the movie. he was very much in an action movie. Everyone else was in kind of a dramedy, like I said. But yeah, we've had a few other Japanese comedy kaiju films, I should say, like, oh gosh, what was the other one? The other one that attacks the G8 summit is the one. Monster X Strikes Back is kind of very similar to this one, but that is 100%, I would say, comedy, you know. Yeah. And this one, really being generous, is like a third comedy at most, I would say, which just doesn't feel, I don't know. I guess there are action movies that have like comedy elements in them, but it's odd. It's odd to have this in there. But yeah, there's just a few parts that dragged for me personally, and I wanted to see more of Arata's main character story, as opposed to the other point of view characters. Still, it was a very fun first watch. Like I said, I didn't know where it was going. And when it gets a re-release, I will rewatch it. Probably won't until then, but I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 for my personal enjoyment. Beautiful looking kaiju movie. What about you, Miles?
I certainly agree that this movie's very, very, very pretty, but I also agree that this movie desperately wants to have its cake and eat it too. And I frankly was extremely bored by this movie. This movie's script is so all over the place. The comedy largely doesn't land for me. And I just, that's the worst part, is like this script it was pretty boring. It wasn't exciting. The pace was odd. Like at least Shin Godzilla, no matter how I might feel that about that movie as a Godzilla film, like that movie clips along. It's long, but like it just goes. And this one, like, it just kind of wanders around sometimes, and you're really kind of figuring out what it's trying to do. And that's, I mean, to me, that's the worst than being bad is being boring for me. And despite the fact that I think the acting and the actors were pretty great, and that the movie was very, very well directed, I did not have a good time with it. And so I'm a lot more harsher on you. I'm with the IMDb folks at a 5 out of 10.
Ooh.
For my personal enjoyment. I mean, like, I think it's borderline fine at best, but, and I will say, I would be willing to watch it again with an official localization just to see if that helps, but we'll see. It could make the difference. I don't know. I mean, we've had movies where we were kind of lukewarm on, and then we watched another version, like we did with Return of Godzilla in 1985, and we did a 180 on that movie.
No, they're both very similar. They're not that far apart.
Yeah, no, we gave Godzilla 1985 an 8, and I think we gave Return of Godzilla like a 7 or a 6.
If only we kept all of these. No, both of them have an 8. You went from an 8 to a 9 for the
I gave Return of Godzilla an 8?
Yes.
I think I need to retroactively get a 7.
No, it's great. It's great, too. Speaking of it, I guess when this episode comes out, I'll have already gone, but Godzilla Day this year, November 3rd, Alamo. Is it Alamo?
Draft House? Probably.
Yeah, well, they do Godzilla Day every year, and they're doing Return of Godzilla, and I've convinced my wife to go with me, so we're going to go see that movie on the big screen.
Nice. I'd definitely go see it on the big screen, but
yeah,
I had a rough time with this one, which is too bad. But let's move into what this movie does largely do well for the most part, and the that's technical. Its technical.
What do you give it for its technical score?
So, I mean, obviously the script really tanks this movie for me. But that said, I have to be kinder to it because, it's well acted. The sets are fantastic. It's well shot. It's well directed. The score is not bad at all. Like, there are so many components to this movie that are just firing on all cylinders. Like, if this movie had a good script, we might be dealing with a 9 or a 10 here. But this script sucks to me. So I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 for its technical, just because that script really just tears this movie apart for me. What about you?
Yeah, it's simple in some ways because it follows a very tried and true formula of like, oh, they're going to try this and it fails in some way. They're going to try this and it fails in some way. And basically they're left with like this final Hail Mary kind of thing that also fails because everyone's not on the same page and they have to have the Deus Ex Machina, which I just, even with, you know, Ultraman coming and saving the day, I kind of wish we would have gotten at least one more scene of our two main characters, you know, after the movie, I guess a little bit more. But yeah, you know, this kind of comedic acting is, I think, very tuned specifically to be consumed and enjoyed by the Japanese audience, you know, that not just being a Godzilla movie, but also being kind of an Ultraman movie. I just don't think this was going to ever be successful in Western kind of eyes.
But I'll say this, like, it wasn't successful with Japanese audiences either.
Yeah.
True. This is not a case of like Lost in Translation. Like, the Japanese audiences also hated it.
Well, I'm saying I'm not a Japanese audience, but I think there is probably more still to get from it, having, you know, grown up over there. There is still a lot of, I think, internationally kind of humorous stuff that translates, some physical comedy that translates very well. I think the director, Satoshi Miki, did an amazing job visually directing this movie. Like you said, it just looks great. But yeah, it better with the budget that this movie had.
No kidding.
And the runtime, like I said, with the runtime and this budget, I really wish we would have got, even if it was Suitimation and not CGI, I would wish we'd gotten some flashbacks with the kaiju, you know? Mm-hmm. I feel like that could have been the opening credits sequence. And even if it was just in the opening credits sequence, it would have really tied everything together. I'm giving this an 8 out of 10 for the technical score. So just a little bit above you, but it's pretty well deserved. The comedic actors, I think, do a great job. The drama actors, it's a great cast in general. Where this stands as its importance as a kaiju movie, I think it's down there a little bit. I do think, though, that this being a singular experiment in kaiju cinema, because I don't think anyone's ever going to try to recreate it because it did so bad, I think this movie is important. I think it is a fun little stealth Ultraman movie. It is a parody kaiju or Godzilla movie. And yeah, if they had dropped the comedic aspect of the film, I think all audiences everywhere would have enjoyed this a lot more. It just feels like it is shoehorned in kind of a little last minute, but I'm giving it a 7 out of 10 for its importance. What about you, Miles?
I'm back where I was. Yeah, I think conceptually this was a home run, but that's it in that respect. So I'm sticking with a 5. This is not a movie I'm going to suggest people check out, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. I think that there's going to be more from this. I mean, right now I have a game on my Steam wish list called Kaiju Cleanup that is very, very similar looking to this game or this film.
I mentioned that.
And like, it looks like it plays kind of like a Power Wash Simulator or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm on board with that. I think we're going to get someone who does take this concept and runs with it a little bit better. It might be a little more time in between because obviously that person's going to get comparisons to this movie or Kaiju number 8. And I think, isn't a Kaiju number 8 like anime or film like in the works right now?
There is a anime film, I believe, that's happening, but I don't know about live action. I will say, yeah, it feels like fodder definitely for a TV show or an ongoing series more so. Mm-hmm. And that, like I said, that is the kind of focus of what the main group that we start with in Kaiju Number 8 is tasked with doing, is the dangerous job of disposing of these corpses.
Yeah, that's the other thing, is they do kind of take some of the danger away, because like, it's not radioactive. It's not.
They say that very specifically at the beginning. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's not acidic. And so like all these things that could be easily like interesting trap for those trying to clean things up, like that in of itself, it could have just been focused on the cleanup folks. And been an interesting movie, like depending on how they wanted to go about it. But like this film just went the weirdest route to me. And I really do wish I liked it, because I loved some of the actors. I think it's very well shot. I was looking up the director's other stuff to see what else he had done, because I do think he's got a great eye behind the camera.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, maybe with the proper translation, it can move the needle a little bit. But I think our scores are kind of where I expected them to be. I'm at a 7 out of 10. You're at a low 6 out of 10. And averaging those together, our podcast final for What to Do with the Dead Kaiju is a 6 out of 10.
Not where I would expect.
Which is in the good category.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it's a bit of a boring one, but I if someone said they wanted to check it out, I would just be like, yeah, do so. Just go in with very tempered expectations. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at.
It is interesting to think, though, that like in ongoing universes, like the MonsterVerse, for example, you know, they have to do this. They do have to break those bodies down in a number of ways. Like San Francisco has like 2 giant Muto corpses, right?
Yeah, but like in universe, they talk about like people like selling stuff in the black market, and
they basically have to shut down San Francisco. It gets destroyed anyway. But
yeah, well, I think even Monarch, the show, mentions, and we'll talk about that later.
Well, they go back.
Mentions
there.
Like them guarding against people who are trying to harvest kaiju parts.
Unfortunately, Boston just gets like atomized. I'm dead in the legendary universe.
Oh, you know, you might not be, because like
I am like downtown, 10 miles away,
downtown Boston. But like up where you are, you might still be standing.
I might be alive. But yeah, I mentioned that because at least one Ghidorah skull survived that. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly which one, but. That is going to do it for What to Do with the Dead Kaiju. Folks, Miles, where can people find us if they want to chat about kaiju?
Well, if you want to chat with us about some monster movies, you can email us at kaijuversushistory@gmail.com. You can post to us at Blue Sky, Kaiju vs. History. You can go to our website, kaijuversushistory.com. Please rate and review our show, comment, share with your friends, let us know what you think. Check out our Letterboxd account, Kaiju vs. History, to see all our reviews and watch our list of films. And head on over to CosmicCrit.com. That's our sister podcast that Patrick and I are both on. We do a actual play Starfinder podcast, but we have a very active Discord on which is a Kaiju vs. History channel. So if you join that Discord, you can chat with other fun folks who have the same interests as you do. Patrick, what are we doing next week?
Oh, yeah. And just quick shout out to Jared over on Blue Sky, who did send us the Kaiju cleanup game trailer, which looks great. It looks like fun. I do think I kind of want to check it out when it drops. Thank you, Miles. Thank you, everyone. Next week, you know, tune in and catch us next time when we're staying in Asia, but we're heading to another country, heading to Thailand for a stab at a new monster movie with kind of a old school style. And we find out if this film with international buzz can make a splash during a very large kaiju worldwide renaissance. Find out along with us and explore the shore next time on History versus the Lake.